Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and I've got a smile in my voice right now because of all we've just overcome some technical challenges. And with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn. And I got to say, you know, for a woman fast approaching her 90th birthday in less than 2 years, you do pretty darn well with modern technology, Mom.
Well, I don't think I'm very savvy. If I didn't have you around, I don't know what I would do.
I know, but think of all the changes, you know, that you've had to deal with in your lifetime. So.
Oh, yeah. Yes, well, I know.
And, of course, as humans, one of a lot of change can result in a lot of stress, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Who is our guest?
That's right. our guest today is Romy Mushtaq, and she is this book is fantastic. I mean, I read it and then I go back and read it again, and the way she has it organized though is just wonderful, and we'll talk about that too. But I want to welcome her. She's amazing author, really.
Dr. Romy Mushtaq, The Busy Brain Cure. Welcome to Writer's Voices.
Monica, Caroline, I have been looking forward to joining you, and the only thing missing between the three of us and all of our readers is a good cup of chai. As I write in the book, when I feel like I'm amongst sisters, it feels like a chai party like my aunties used to hold in the afternoon.
Oh, wow. Well, to give a little more background on Dr. Romy, she is a board-certified physician, award-winning wellness speaker, and the founder of Brain Shift. She brings together over 20 years of authority in neurology, integrative medicine, and mindfulness to deliver programs and create cultural change. She currently speaks and consults for Fortune 500 companies, professional athletes, and global associations, and is the chief wellness officer for Evolution Hospitality. And her expertise is featured in the national media, such as NPR, NBC, TED Talks, etc. And you can learn more about her at Dr. Romy, that's DrRomie.com, and many other places, I am sure. So welcome again to our little chai party, Dr. Romy.
Oh, it's an honor. Tell me, what's your favorite thing to have with a good cup of tea or coffee? I'm all about the comfort food these days.
Well,
as the listeners are going to learn very quickly.
Okay. My favorite things involve sugar, and I just read that I shouldn't combine caffeine and sugar. Mm. So what am I going to do?
Yes, it is. Well, first of all, I want to know what Caroline is doing, because as a brain doctor and someone that's interested in longevity with also my background in integrative medicine, we're going to say whatever Caroline is doing, you and I are going to do, Monica.
Well, Caroline, what's your number one health tip here for graceful aging and longevity?
Well, frankly, I am taking a lot of Shaklee vitamins. Mm. And that's, you know.
Including the one that you really recommend in your book in terms of probably the most important supplement for brain health.
Uh-huh. Right.
Absolutely.
D3. I've been taking that for a long time. Yeah. I'm just, yep. my grandson, I like to say I'm Shaklee eyes. And that's why I can still function.
Yeah, so vitamin D3. So should we just jump right in and talk about why that's so important?
I mean, we started there. It was meant to be. And I will say, Caroline, you are decades ahead of your time, and it's an honor to serve you both on the Writer's Voice today and your listeners. So absolutely. You know, I was starting my neurology residency training, I entered neurology at a time where less than 5% of the brain doctors in the United States were women. And we would take care of both neurology and psychiatry patients. And even back then, we knew that patients who had schizophrenia, depression, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, their brain and disease would do much worse if you had low vitamin D3 levels. And even back then, I was wondering, gosh, I wonder what about everybody else and the importance of vitamin D3? Well, it turns out, I think vitamin D gets a really bad marketing rap. When we say vitamin, people don't pay attention, or they just say, oh, It's the sunshine vitamin. It is the superhero of your brain. And no hormone in our brain or body, 50 of them, can work without adequate levels of vitamin D3. And as we're going to break down in a little bit in my book, when we're chronically stressed out and we have a busy brain and neuroinflammation, our vitamin D3 levels can plummet. And that just makes everything worse. And absolutely, it's protective over your memory as well.
Wow. And
that's amazing. That's amazing.
You know, didn't they used to? They used to put, and maybe they still do, put vitamin D in milk. And,
you know, yeah.
Yeah. And we, of course, many of us grew up drinking in the United States, grew up drinking milk with every meal.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
we don't do that anymore.
Mm, yeah.
True. Very true.
It is. It's very true. I mean, y'all are in Iowa. I grew up in a small town in Illinois. And, you know, our big argument with Iowa was we were the state of cows. And Iowa said, no, we were. And it was the same. I grew up with a glass of milk as a comfort food after a long day at school. Remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You came home. You had Oreos and milk.
You got Oreos. Your mom, Monica, is really cool. We didn't get Oreos. If we were really good, we got pecan sandies. But most of the time, we got the 99-cent, like, knockoff Big Newton cookies. And they were gross, so we just had the milk.
To be honest, most of the time, we got home-baked cookies, I will say. Pepernuts, which is a German thing, which is really kind of like a very soft scone. And a lot of course oatmeal, raisin, and chocolate chip, and other ginger molasses. There was a molasses cookie.
Oh.
Yeah, there were all kinds of different things. So, but the milk was definitely
the milk
was
key.
Yeah,
yeah. So to go back to your question about is there enough vitamin D3 in foods, and the answer sadly is no. The most rich foods is not even dairy, but a lot of foods like your egg yolk or certain types of fish. However, and mushrooms, we can't eat enough to make up for the low vitamin D3 levels. And here's a few reasons why. Yes, for some, vitamin D3 is a sunshine vitamin. But in order to get enough vitamin D3 levels, we have to be out in the sun with four limbs exposed for 40 minutes every day. Well, right now as we're recording this, it's winter in most places in the United States. And in the summer, no dermatologist in their right mind would want us out that long in the sunshine every day without sunscreen on and to prevent skin
mm-hmm.
cancer.
And the sunscreen prevents the absorption mm-hmm. of the vitamin
absorption
D.
Absorption of vitamin D3, absolutely.
Yeah.
But here's the other issue. Even if you're out in the sunshine and getting enough vitamin D3, we live in a chronically stressed out world. The metabolic pathways for the precursors of vitamin D to go from your skin into your bloodstream, to your liver, and to your gut, all of that because of inflammation gets messed up. And so I'm not one to push a lot of supplements, but vitamin D3 is key.
And it seems like the other one that you're pretty big on is fish oil.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that. So,
okay.
You know, for the Busy Brain Cure, I didn't want to put people on a diet. I wanted us to honor the foods we all grew up eating. You with cookies, that we could all hear the joy in your voice, and me with the Indian food that my mom and my aunties used to make. And I really believe that in order to be healthy, we have to eat the foods that used to bring us joy. But eat it mindfully. When we have a busy brain, we're just, you could eat the whole bag of cookies and it's mind numbing, and we don't want that. So when you go through the protocol, weeks 4 through 6 of the 8-week protocol in the Busy Brain Cure, the 8-week plan to find focus, tame anxiety, and sleep again, we want to give your body and your brain especially the right fuel. And so in week 6 of the protocol, we introduce the concept that fats are not the enemy. And that we actually ideally want you to add a healthy fat, 1 to 2 servings to every meal. So just like you were talking about, we would drink milk at every meal. Instead, I say, make a list of your favorite healthy fats and add that to every meal. So an example is I put coconut oil in my oatmeal, steel cut oats in the morning, or I have avocado toast. And even just adding 1 to 2 tablespoons of olive oil on a salad or in your pasta will do the trick. And that's key. Now, for some people who are busy, don't prepare meals or eating on the go, we add the fish oil capsules is key. But we find that it really resets the circadian rhythm, your hunger, and it provides the fuel that your brain cells need.
I always kind of thought about it as lubrication for the brain.
I like that. I'm going to use that, Monica. Yes. Lubrication. I think, for the electronical networks, the cells communicating with each other. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like you can't run, of course, now with electric cars, it's different, but you can't run an old-fashioned car without oil, and you can't run your brain without oil.
Agreed. Without healthy fats. And so I don't know. Carolyn, do you eat healthy fats? What are some of your favorites? I mean, you eat the vitamin D, so I figure you're also decades ahead in your nutrition plan too.
Oh gosh, I can. Well, I eat quite a bit of cheese and I eat chicken. I don't, tell you the truth, I don't cook a lot, but, I buy chicken already prepared and eat that with all different things.
In general, would you say that healthy fats are vegetable-based, plant-based, and the unhealthy fats are animal-based?
No. Actually, not. So we want to look at the omega-3 levels. So yes, some can be vegetable-based. I gave the example of avocado or coconut oil. But don't forget, low-mercury fish is probably the biggest bang for your buck if you like fish.
Right. And mom does eat a lot of salmon.
There you go.
Salmon is my favorite.
She had a secret. Yeah. There you go, Carolyn. That's exactly it. That's it. And any kind of low mercury fish, so even if it's tuna or sardines, is a great resource of healthy fats and mackerel and all the kind of fishes that are out there. So absolutely, that is. And then nuts as well, which goes to the plant-based. Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I try to have a meal, fruit, protein, vegetable, and make sure that I have all of those things. So
you're a walking testimony to healing the busy brain. Yes.
So let's take a few steps back and define the busy brain.
Mm-hmm. The busy brain is not the fact that we have busy lives. The busy brain is actually the research I've been doing of when we live as chronically stressed out individuals, especially here in the West, that nobody really wants to be told to eat berries and breathe or take an emotional resilience class. Those things don't work. Something else was happening in our brain. And I did the research on 17,000 people took the busy brain test that we include in the book for free and give you a brain score. And it was fascinating. We found that high achieving, highly intelligent individuals like the both of you and all of the listeners, when you're chronically stressed out and it goes unchecked, you develop 3 key symptoms of the pattern of neuroinflammation: difficulty focusing or adult onset ADD with a reduced attention span, feeling anxious, and having difficulty falling and staying asleep. So that is the busy brain. 3 symptoms: anxiety, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, and insomnia in adults. But this book is for adults, not for children.
Well, I did take your busy brain test, and I got a score of 25, so quite low.
Excellent.
And yes, but I have been practicing transcendental meditation for 30 years, and I meditate twice a day. So, and even though I have a very high stress job because I run a company with over 100 employees, that has made a huge difference for me.
Absolutely. And you read about my journey to finding meditation after life-saving surgery, in chapter 5 of the book. And I agree. And I hear that often. We know that when you meditate long-term, it really does transform the structure and function of your brain and how you process stress. But here's something else that I found, Monica, is there were a lot of people that said, I'm meditating and I still have these symptoms. Is there something
that is true? That is true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I certainly know plenty of people who still have had issues despite long-term meditation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also identify with what you say when people are experiencing this anxiety and if they're told to meditate and they can't because of the what we used to call monkey mind.
Monkey mind, yeah. And I call it the busy brain because you know, it's really true feelings of anxiousness and reduced attention span and actual symptoms that go along with adult onset ADD or ADHD, and you can't sleep at night. And if you tell a person who has a busy brain and a score above 30 to sit down and meditate, it'll actually make them more anxious. Or as a leader in the workplace, it'll make them feel like, gosh, she doesn't care. She doesn't hear what I'm saying. I can't sit and meditate right now.
Yeah. 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 Tell us a little bit about how you came to understand this through your own experience.
Yeah. You know, on the outside, Monica and Carolyn, it looked like I was doing everything right. I was raised in a small town in Illinois with one success mantra from my dad, my mom, and my aunties. We have one daughter and you will become a doctor. So from childhood, yes, high achieving student, entered neurology. On the outside, it looked like I had achieved everything I was raised to do. I became a doctor, a professor, a researcher. I loved my job, but I was constantly pushing on all cylinders, very sleep deprived, not eating healthy the way on the foods that I was raised to eat in home cooked meals, just grabbing what I could in the hospital cafeteria or skipping meals altogether. And the chronic stress nearly killed me. And I should have known better. I'm a doctor. And in 2010, I ended up in life-saving surgery and with precancerous lesions. And I remember laying there in the hospital thinking, good God, nothing I've learned in medical school is going to help me now. I don't know what to do. And it sent me on a global journey that you read about in the book from chapters 5 through 9. And the teachers, especially the male allies that came along the way, including my meditation teachers in Cambodia, and amazing cutting edge doctors, and helped me to create this protocol.
Wow. Now, one of the things that I found most interesting was your move from traditional academic medicine to more community-based medicine to integrative medicine to what you're doing now. And and some of the kind of the hesitation you had along the way.
Oh, yes. The busy brain. And you hear in my stories, anytime I get a busy brain, don't we all have a voice of an inner critic or self-judgment or fear show up? And mine is the cutting voice of the judgmental aunties, not the loving aunties, the judgmental aunties. And they would be like, you must be a brain doctor, but you have lost your mind. You became an entrepreneur. We don't even know what that is. Yes. Every time I meditated and every time I was in Shavasana and yoga, there was like this inner knowing, like what I call the soul compass. Like I was destined to bring all of this world of neurology, integrative medicine, and mindfulness together and say, how could I transform the workplace so we stopped stressing our employees out? Like how could I help individuals and leaders inside the workplace so they didn't end up in the hospital the way I did? And it was like a tall order, but here I am today having researched it as a keynote speaker, people calling me to hear my lectures, and now serving as a chief wellness officer. Since you got that bio just here in the new year, I've now transitioned as to chief wellness officer at Great Wolf Resorts. And How can we do that? How can we build programs where we're taking care of our employees? So this is over 10,000 employees that we're keeping people healthy, happy, and engaged at work.
Wow. Wow.
That's a real accomplishment.
Yeah, no kidding.
Thank you.
I took my grandkids to Great Wolf Lodge in Dallas area some years ago. They loved it there.
Absolutely, right? The mission to bring joy to families. And so to us, it was important that we take care of our employees. We call them the PAC members, so that they feel joy, so that they can give joy to families. And hospitality, like healthcare and so many other industries, it's a 24/7 job. Those hotels are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And when, you know, those lodges are full, nobody gets a day off. And so what can we do to promote and heal a busy brain and avoid stress in the workplace?
For those who maybe aren't familiar with it, if you don't have one near you, and maybe they aren't all the same, but the one we went to had great indoor water park and arcade, and it's just a really fun place for kids.
For the whole family.
For the whole
Before I joined Great Wolf Resorts as their chief wellness officer, I'm an auntie that would take nieces and nephew there. So the Gurney, Wisconsin Dells location, same thing. They all have indoor water parks. And you know, the one thing that was key that we talk about in this book too is it provides connection to families. Like my nieces and nephews will tell you, this is the one place, you know, Auntie Romy doesn't have her laptop or phone open. Like I'm actually playing with the kids. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You're listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today is Dr. Romy Mushtaq, author of The Busy Brain Cure. So, Dr. Romy, what made you decide to write this book?
I think there's three things, if I had to be honest. One of them was I was doing the research and I was speaking and people would ask, like they would hear me on stage for 45 minutes and be like, what do I do next? Do you have a book? So the demand was there. The second thing was, is I'm a high achieving professional and the pandemic happened. And all of a sudden I wasn't flying around the country speaking and consulting. We were at home. And my CEO at the time was like, Romy, there's something called Netflix. Get a membership. And I watched Tiger King and I was traumatized. Do you remember Tiger King? I don't know if I
remember.
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I don't think this Netflix thing is for me. I'm going to research a cure for the busy brain. We have all this data and let me do that. But then the third thing, honestly, was this. When I was burnt out and in the middle of a mental health crisis in the workplace, and we didn't even use those terms back then when I got sick back in 2009, 2010, I just remembered how lonely I felt. I would be walking through the hospital corridors and my patients knew something was wrong. They'd be like, Doc, you don't seem like yourself. Are you okay? But do you know not a single colleague asked me if I was okay? Maybe they were too scared. Some of them were gossiping about me because the nurses would tell me. And I just thought, I want to write this book and share my story and share the story of a lot of brave executives who went through the protocol so that maybe if somebody listening today is feeling alone and stressed and burned out, that you would know we're here for you and that you're not alone.
Mm. Wow.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to congratulate you on the way that you organized this book, the summary at the end of each chapter. That is fantastic. I mean, I'm a retired school teacher, and if all books like this, if you know, textbooks did that, it would really be great. It really would. I mean, this was
coming from you, Caroline. First, I'm a big fan of the Writer's Voice. Two, knowing that you're a retired school teacher and you're my shero, a healthy, brilliant brain at almost 90. I want to cry. I'm truly honored. And I knew when I wrote this book, you know, for anyone listening who's like, I have a book in me, I'm sure they listen to the Writer's Voice all the time and they're inspired by all your authors. This was hard work. I started to research this book back in 2017. I was researching, let's say, The Busy Brain. And then when we came up with the protocol, it took a year and a half to research the protocol. Then the writing of the book started and I had to learn how to write stories. I knew how to write the science. I didn't know how to write the stories. And I worked with an amazing developmental editor and I want to give her a big shout out right now on the show, Melanie Bates. And, you know, she taught me how to share stories on pages. And so, that I'm sitting here with you today, I feel very proud of this book. I feel very honored to have given birth to this book.
Well, stories is how we learn. You know?
Yeah.
You could have written a book all about the science, I'm sure, but nobody would want to read it.
I think that would have been the cure to the insomnia, wouldn't it have been? If you picked up the book and you only read the science, and because, you know, people who've read the book like yourself, a lot of people are honest and they say, listen, I'm not a doctor or scientist. Chapters 5 through 9 are pretty dense. And I know it is. And when I give my keynote lectures, I'm like, if you took the busy brain test and your score is above a 30, just go straight to chapter 10 where the protocol is. We got you, right? But I really wanted to write the science in this book, because this book is meant to disrupt how traditional doctors are viewing brain and mental health. And I knew if you walked in with the lab slip to your doctor, that's in chapter 16 of this book, the doctors would be skeptical. So I'm like, hand them a copy of the book and the science is all there from chapters 5 through 9. They can't argue it.
Yeah. Do people have trouble finding doctors who are willing to work with them on this, on solving their busy brain in this way?
Well, so let's talk about that. I think two things is finding an integrative medicine doctor is not easy, nor is it cheap. And because I'm a chief wellness officer prior to this at Evolution Hospitality, now Great Wolf Resorts, I wanted to create a system that people could do with themselves at home or to do with a team, and that a primary care doctor could run the labs and they'd be covered under traditional insurance. And so I was very thoughtful about the labs that I chose. And then if the doctors are skeptical and they read the science and they see, you know, over 400 medical articles were quoted in this book, they can't argue.
Mm. Now,
That's right.
Isn't integrative medicine the future?
I think it's a combination that I really want to honor the cutting edge traditional healthcare system here in the West, in the United States and other Western developed nations. It's, you know, if you have a car accident or a heart attack, you know, your chance to survive is great. I think especially if you're in a city with a well-known hospital, right? Let's not talk about access to rural America, like where I grew up in Illinois. That's a different story. But I think it needs both. You need that because you read in the story, a traditional cardiothoracic surgeon saved my life. And so I want to honor Dr. Pellegrini and all the doctors that are out there. I also am excited that over 68 medical schools in the United States now have integrative medicine fellowships. And so I think you're going to see a bifurcation of doctors that go into the sick care system to take care of the emergencies. And more doctors are going into lifestyle medicine, integrative medicine, functional medicine to actually help treat chronic disease at the root. And my hope is that primary care doctors will pick up the busy brain cure, or patients will take the lab slip to them and they'll have no choice.
Well, you know, I live in a community where there's in Fairfield, Iowa. So I don't know if you know about Fairfield, but
I took my Ayurveda class through the Maharishi Institute.
Of course.
Yes.
There are a lot of people here who reject traditional Western medicine. And I am not one of them. I believe, as you do, that in some ways we have the best medical system in the world, for that sort of, you know, for that crisis intervention. But I'm also very happy to see more and more recognition that nutrition and hormones and exercise and sleep are really part of being healthy. And it just can be so difficult sometimes to pinpoint what is the problem. And people try so many different things. And I loved in your book where you talk about where you say when people come to you and it's like, Dr. Romy, don't you think I've already tried that? different cures. So what makes this, the busy brain cure, what makes it different and more effective?
So a couple of things. One is, most of the advice that's out there to treat chronic stress, burnout, anxiety, insomnia is outdated. Our brains have changed in structure and function and wiring in a post-pandemic world, right? So one is, this is up-to-date research. Number two, it's one of the only books that gets to the root cause of what's actually going on with a busy brain. We talk about a particular pattern of neuroinflammation that happens in the hypothalamus and resets the circadian rhythm. And we need to fix that. And that is affecting not only your ability to focus and potential ADHD and insomnia and sleep, but it can also affect your hunger mechanisms, your hormone cycles, everything else. And so I think that's two things right there that make this book different. It's the up-to-date research. It is that we get to the root cause, and we'll talk about the brain shift protocol in a second, what it stands for. And the third thing is, not only did I give the protocol that I had used in clinic, we tested and refined the protocol in over 1,000 high-functioning, high-achieving adults. And, you know, we've tooled it. And so that's why I feel like this book is different. It gives you a researched roadmap.
And another thing is, it's not hard. You know, it's not, there's how many books have I picked up where I would have to change my entire, and I feel like I eat pretty healthy, but, you know, I'd have to change everything I eat to go by this other protocol. And with yours, that's not the case.
It's not the case. And there's two reasons why. Being on a restrictive diet or cleanse actually raises stress hormone levels in our brain. And foods that we associate that bring us comfort, like you talked about your mom's homemade scones and cookies, and I was talking about my mom and auntie's Indian food. Now the Western diet culture will label that as bad, and we create trauma tracks in our brain and guilt and shame. And we shouldn't do that. And the second thing is, most Western recommended diets and cleanses are very Eurocentric. They don't take into account inclusion and belonging. And I'm a chief wellness officer of a very globally diverse organization. And anybody that's dealing with workplace wellness, like, you can't force a certain diet on someone. I firmly believe that people who follow paleo or keto or Ayurveda, or they're carb lovers or chocoholics, and everyone should be welcomed at the same table and feel like they belong. And that's why it was important for me to create a protocol that gave you brain shifts, or what are known as micro habits, about your food, but without making you go on a diet.
Exactly. And I love that about this. Dr. Romy, why don't you read a little bit from the Busy Brain Cure for us?
I'd be honored to. I think I want to start with the introduction. I purposely did not have anyone write the foreword because I wanted the first thing the readers to hear was my voice. I wrote this book for you, my fellow unapologetic type A success-driven professionals. You may have been told to slow down, but the problem is, we don't want to slow down. Quite frankly, we don't have the luxury to pause, take a break, or go on a self-care sabbatical. You are the leaders, change makers, caregivers, single parents, night school attending, mortgage paying adults who live in the real world. A 4-hour work week? Impossible. The successful people with passion for their purpose, whom I've served, aren't working 4 hours a week. They are teachers, lawyers, journalists, nurses, techies, finance executives, hotel general managers, airline pilots, accountants, doctors, startup founders, architects, nonprofit directors, national sales leaders, C-suite executives, bankers, or pharmaceutical representatives. And they have a deep, meaningful goal. In consulting with these dedicated, hardworking, and amazing people, I discovered that we all had one thing in common. If one more person told us to chill or go with the flow, we would run over with them with our wearable tech and designer shoes. If you don't know my work and haven't seen one of my keynotes, you might be asking, how do I know if this applies to me? Let's have some Dr. Romy real talk. You might have a busy brain if any one of these statements resonates with you. You can't connect to your personality without a venti dairy-free latte in the morning. If by chance the barista used whole milk, then you are bitter with a capital B for the rest of the day. You tell me you just drink coffee, but you really chug 3 energy drinks. And if I caught you from the stage, you tried to hide the can under your seat. Busted! Your day schedule task list has been hijacked by a mysterious external force. There are too many browser windows open on your computer and in your brain. You try to focus on one important task, but the dinging of notifications from your email inbox, messenger channels, and text messages distracts you. It takes 47 minutes to finish a task that should have taken less than 3 minutes. You finally make it to the end of the day, and you need a glass of wine or 3, followed by bourbon to take the edge off. And if you don't drink alcohol, you're trying the latest fad supplement that some Instagram influencer shared. You're wired and you're tired, and you sure you'll sleep well tonight. But when you put your head down on your pillow, you can't shut down the racing thoughts. Once again, the ping of notification pulls your finger to the screen of your phone, and you lose another 92 minutes down the Google research rabbit hole, wondering, why you've been researching high-grade plungers for your bathroom.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's some excerpts from the introduction of the book.
Wow. And that's Dr. Romy Mushtaq reading from The Busy Brain Cure. So the stories that you tell the stories about your own life and how, mm-hmm. you know, you really hit the wall and mm-hmm. and had to start over in many ways. And you also tell mm-hmm. some stories about some of other people too, who have mm-hmm. Used this protocol to improve their lives. Mm-hmm. So can you share any of that with us?
Mm-hmm. I think in chapter 12, one of the stories I'm still touched with is, you read it earlier in the book that I did research called Project Evo, where we put 500 leaders at Evolution Hospitality, almost 500 through digital detox, and I studied the effects on their sleep and mental health and happiness at work. And one of them particularly was Nancy, a native of the island of Oahu, and she had lost her aloha spirit to video games. So when we started Project Evo, she was really nervous because she said she was so stressed out having to be pleasant and talk to people all day, and she was a little bit of an introvert, so that to come home, she would disconnect, not by talking to her family, but by playing video games. And she got so addicted that she would wake up even early in the morning at 4:30 a.m. and have coffee and play video games to go to work to cope. And so she initially struggled with the digital detox, which is week 3 of the protocol, and the brain shift 3. And as you see her story unfolding in that chapter, she, after 1 week, started to sleep better, and people at work were like, "Are you in love? What are you doing? You look so rested. Your face is glowing." And she realized it was the digital detox alone and helping her sleep. She did nothing else different. And she gave her video console game away to a family member, and then she gave away her iPad, and then she gave her laptop, and replaced it by calling loved ones in the evening or sitting with her mom who lived with her at home and telling them she loved them. And it literally, digital detox helped her to disconnect so she could reconnect with the people she loved. And she started to write poetry after that. And it was something she had forgotten that she loved and doing in childhood. And to this day, Nancy practices digital detox.
I got to admit, there's times I think I am definitely a high functioning person, and people are always saying, how do you do everything you do? And yet, the amount of time I waste on my phone, you know, mm-hmm. Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. Well, it's not, you know, and sometimes I'm connecting with people that way, but the games that, they're all like, I excuse myself because they're intellectual games, you know, it's the crossword mm-hmm. or the word mm-hmm. puzzles and mm-hmm. so forth. But do I really need an hour a day of that?
Well, here's the thing, Monica, I'm not going to judge you because you told me your score was under a 30. So whatever you're doing is working for you.
That's true.
I think just talking to both you and your mom, Caroline, you both had already adapted a lot of practices that we teach in the Brain Shift Protocol, and you've been living that life. But what I say, and thank you for that moment of honesty, you know, for you, it's social media or the games. For me, it's checking work emails and Slack channels. Like, we all are doing that. And what I say is, I just have learned to brain pause, and I schedule my social media time, or you schedule that game time in your calendar, rather than picking up the phone when you're driving a car because you're at a red light and you're worried you missed a work email. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. Or you're standing in the supermarket line, and instead of just waiting and doing nothing and taking in the sights and the sound and letting your brain experience something different, you pick up your phone to see if someone tagged you on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. I don't do that, but I understand what you're saying. Now, we've talked a lot about, Dr. Romy, we've talked about how easy this 8-week protocol is. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so do you want to give us a little kind of a summary
Absolutely.
Of it?
Great. Absolutely. You know, the brain shift stands for micro habits that I particularly researched that if you did this one simple action, it would create maximum impact on your brain and mental health and physical health. So it's an 8-week protocol, and step one is to take the busy brain test and you get a brain score. Week two, we handle the shift in the protocol, the S, which is sleep and your circadian rhythm. We put you on a 7-day sleep protocol, and you can download it and even do it at work with your team or loved ones, adults at home. It's based in cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia techniques. Simple things like setting a regular time to go to bed and wake up every morning. So that's it. And clean sheets. And here's a fun one that I think you both would enjoy. From my feng shui teacher, I learned, look underneath your bed and take out everything from underneath your bed. It actually consciously is disturbing the energy of your bedroom and your sleep. So that's a fun one, a bonus tip that's in there. Week three, we add digital detox, which we just talked about. Week four, we talk about how to do a brain pause if your busy brain is preventing you from meditating. And we introduce concepts like sound healing and shaking. And then week five, we actually introduce how to boost your daytime energy and focus. Now that you've reset your circadian rhythm, we focus on the F in the shift protocol, which is food and how you fuel yourself. So we break down if you're going to have a carbohydrate, how to time your caffeine intake and vice versa. And then we talked about healthy fats at the top of the interview. And then week seven of the protocol is key. And I think it's one of the secret sauces that really gained respect from clinicians in this protocol is when you're chronically stressed and burned out and have a busy brain, there could be something else underlying going on. We send you to get your labs. And that's the H and the I in the shift protocol. We're checking your hormones and markers of inflammation. Why is this important? You'll read the story of Kelly in the book in week seven of the protocol. She thought she was a high-performing sales leader, executive, and was so anxious. She thought she had to quit her job, that her job was making her anxious. And she joined this program because her company was doing it. And just because her team was going for labs, she went. And it turned out she had an abnormal thyroid gland problem. 1 in 8 women in the United States have this. And routine testing can miss it. She did the full thyroid panel. The doctor saw that, heard her symptoms of anxiety. They did an ultrasound, and they caught stage 1 thyroid cancer early, and it was able to be removed safely. Had she not had a busy brain and done these labs, thyroid cancer would have gone undetected until it was a much later stage. We can't tell you how many lives we save on this protocol because people find out it's a problem with blood sugar, thyroid, or a low vitamin D3 level.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing.
That is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then week eight?
Week eight, we ask you to put it all together and repeat the busy brain test and then go back to the intention that you set in week one. For instance, when I'm stressed, my shoulder and neck are in pain. Is that feeling better? And then we ask you to pick 1 to 2 brain shifts that feel easy for you to do that you did in the 8-week protocol and continue them. And that's week eight.
Wow. So one of the things that really struck me was this caffeine and carbohydrate.
Can
you explain why you don't want to have simple carbohydrates when you're having your caffeine?
Yes, and it goes against everything my aunties talked about of having a nice biscuit with your chai in the afternoon. Or here in America, a lot of people want a donut or croissant with their coffee in the morning. If you're going to choose to eat white sugar, white flour, white rice, white potatoes, then don't have caffeine within an hour before or after. Caffeine is okay for most people's brain, but it actually stimulates a certain region of your brain. And when you add high glycemic carbohydrates, it starts to stimulate the insulin receptors in your brain. Now, a lot of people listening are like, insulin receptors, you mean like diabetes, Dr. Romy? Yes. But this isn't about the diabetes in your pancreas, type 2 diabetes. Insulin resistance also happens in your brain, something at the Mayo Clinic they now call type 3 diabetes that can affect your memory. And it turns out that when you've had caffeine and you add sugar, a high glycemic carbohydrate to this, that it's actually like pouring gasoline on a forest fire. and that inflammation is going to actually get worse. Those interleukin 1 levels get raised, and you have even more feeling of frazzled, and you can't focus when that initial energy shock and boost wears off. So it actually makes your ability to pay attention and your ADHD worse. It makes your anxiety worse. So we tell people choose one or the other, but not both together. And you know what? In high achieving professionals, most of them, Monica, Caroline, I don't know about you, but they choose the caffeine. I certainly do. I don't know about you.
Well, it seems I was actually raised in a home where we didn't have caffeine except for chocolate. And Caroline still does not drink tea or coffee.
Okay.
And I do, but I drink normally one cup a day, and sometimes I don't drink any.
Perfect.
You know, yeah. Sometimes I do. Absolutely. Sometimes I have two. Sometimes I don't have any. Mm-hmm. I naturally do one of the things you recommend, which is I don't drink it first thing in the morning. I wait until later in the morning.
Absolutely. Which is ideal for most people, is our cortisol levels for most of us are pretty healthy in the morning, and our energy hormone levels. And if you wait 60 to 90 minutes, you'll actually see a better benefit to drinking caffeine in the morning. And so certainly, you know, we see for most people, for cognition, for energy, for metabolism, 1 to 2 cups of coffee in the morning is just fine. It's those venti lattes stacked with sugar that are the issue.
So right. No, yeah. And when I do get a latte, I ask for half syrup, because I don't like it real sweet, but I don't like it with no sweetener at all. And I don't like stevia or artificial sweeteners. So what am I going to do?
Artificial sweeteners are a no-no. They cross the blood-brain barrier and cause inflammation. But if you don't like stevia, how about monk fruit?
I could try that.
Mm-hmm.
Or that agave.
Or agave, yeah, absolutely, or agave, absolutely, a little bit of agave is fine. So really, having those are ideal, more than the white sugar and all the chemicals that can go into the flavoring. That it's as simple as that. Like, you know, I don't want to ruin people's coffee dates or your favorite flavored coffee creamers of the season. The brain shift, you know, you see the stories of the aunties. As you heal a busy brain, the judgment goes away and there's joy and hope. I want people to have joy and hope in their life. And if gathering over a cup of tea or coffee with a loved one is going to give you joy, well, then who am I to stand in the way of it?
So, Dr. Romy, let's talk a little bit about the writing of the book. You mentioned that you started it during the pandemic. And did you have a set writing routine that you used?
Mm-hmm. Yes and no. I was really thankful for my developmental editor, because remember, I was also speaking and rebuilding a business and testing the protocol. And I think having a developmental editor helped me, because we spent the first month or so just mapping out the outline of the book. I had a pretty good idea. And, you know, my publisher was very helpful. So we did that. And once we did that, she kept me on a writing schedule so that I knew pages were due to her every Tuesday. And we would have a call like this every Friday to go over my writing and really to see, was it resonating with my target audience? Was it making sense and all of that? And so I think that helped me. I'm not going to lie. There were a lot of times where I was like the bad medical student cramming for a test at the last minute. I'd be so busy that I would be up late on Monday night until the wee hours of Tuesday morning writing. But that was one thing I did. The second thing I think that we did that was so helpful is both of us have alluded to, all three of us, that this book is both facts and science, but also stories. And it helped my writing process to separate writing stories from the science and then putting the chapters together.
Oh, interesting. So the book is structured in three sections.
Mm-hmm.
What are those three separate sections?
Yeah, I call it the hero's journey. You know, if you look at the Joseph Campbell's hero journey, but since I'm a woman author and breaking records as a woman author hitting the USA Today bestseller list, we call it the hero's journey. The first section of the book, you're brought into my story of how every title and label and achievement can't save me from myself. Wearing stress as a badge of honor and working through burnout and pushing through. And I think you really read my vulnerable moments, including dealing with some of the patriarchal systems inside medicine and finding out that, like, my life is not perfect and I'm ending up in life-saving surgery, and really taking the people through that. In the second section of the book, the stories are the teachers arrive to show me a path forward of what now becomes the protocol, the brain shift protocol to heal busy brain. And very mindfully, I highlighted, I don't know if either one of you noticed, they are all male teachers in chapters 5 through 9. I wanted to teach this leadership lesson of how to be a male ally, sponsor, and mentor. And then in section 3, you read the stories of the individuals. Now, you know, the teacher has come after her own journey, and now I'm the teacher teaching the protocol, and you read people on their micro stories of how elements of the protocol help them. So that was how the story was laid out. And the underlying kind of fun theme I've alluded to is when you have a busy brain, we succumb to fear, judgment, inner critic, and that's the voices of my cutting aunties. But by the end of the book, the aunties are very loving and full of hope and praying. And like, that's what happens when you brain shift. We find hope and joy again. And so that's how the book was laid out, just from a writer's point of view, not the science. I thought that would be interesting to share on this interview because I've not had a chance to share how we planned that part of the book out.
Oh, interesting. And by the end of the book, you are actually become an auntie to others.
Yes, I am the official doctor. You see a manager from the NBA who is one of my clients talking, saying, of course you can share my story, Dr. Romy. Everyone needs a dose of Dr. Auntie Romy with a whole lot of straight talk.
You do talk about a lot about how those judgmental voices in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any hints for how to, not pass those on to the next generation?
Mm-hmm. I think we as adults must heal our own busy brain first. It's why in workplace wellness and psychology, we often say people are taught classes on dealing with the inner critic, which mindfulness teaches us so well, or confidence, and why don't those things work? Because if we have chronic stress and neuroinflammation in our brain, the channel of our brain can get set to negative. And I think our job first, at least what I've learned from my healing my busy brain and my meditation practice, was radical self-compassion. And then when I was able to practice this radical self-compassion and healing my busy brain, then I can practice that compassion outwardly towards others.
Wow. You know, I've always felt fortunate in that I don't have a lot of self-judgment. I don't have those voices mm-hmm. in my head. So I got to give some credit to my mother.
Absolutely.
Because she never criticized me.
Yeah, that's incredible. And you know, what I want to bless Caroline and for that, but most of us aren't blessed with that, right? And
yeah.
it is.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Caroline? Do you feel like you have that self-judgment, that those voices in your head, or did you not have them either?
Well, my mother never criticized me. I had really great parents. I mean, I thank God for them every day. Because they were, and grandparents too. I could always,
amazing.
You know, I could always trust them, and, you know, they were kind and loving, and not everybody has that. And I just so thankful that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I have 5 wonderful children, and they're,
now,
you know, I mean,
I can't say that Dad was never critical. He was quite critical, but somehow I didn't internalize it.
Yeah. 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 Good. That's good.
Yeah.
I think that's an amazing place to end. My book is dedicated to all my teachers and my aunties. And I wouldn't be where I am today without my own mother and father. They are immigrants, and English was my third language.
Uh-huh.
And their one wish was that their children would have opportunities and an education that they never had. And I think here I am, and this book is a testament to decades long of research and finding my healing journey with the help of my loved ones, like my parents and my aunties, and also the love that they had and that belief.
And did they adapt to the idea that you were an entrepreneur rather than a neurologist?
Oh, yes. You know, I think when they started to see the impact that was happening, and they people would come into my dad's office and be like, "We saw your daughter's TED Talk," and dad was like, "Who is dead?" You know, or you know, then they really understood. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations, and want to recommend this book to anyone who has a busy brain. The Busy Brain Cure, the 8-week plan to find focus, tame anxiety, and sleep again. And Caroline, do you have a closing quote for us today?
Well, I have several, but this one is really, really good, I think. To know, it was from her book, and she quotes Ralph Waldo Emerson, "To know that even one life has breathed easier because you have lived, this is to have succeeded." Amen. Oh. Amen. Thank you, Paul.
Well, thank you, Dr. Romy. And see you all next week on Writer's Voices.